Good morning. Welcome back. 8 minutes past the hour at Faith Radio. What does the future hold for a nation in which the citizens often hold radically different ideas about politics, religion, marriage, and even good and evil? You guessed it. I'm talking about the good old U.S. of A. Dr. John Anazu believes that is possible, even though it won't be easy. John is an associate professor of law and political science at Washington University in St. Louis. He's also a senior fellow at the Institute for Advanced Studies and Culture at the University of Virginia. John has a new book out called Confident Pluralism, Surviving and Thriving Through Deep Difference. Good morning, John. Welcome to Faith Radio.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me.
So our society has become so ultra-polarized on so many issues, and my concern is the coming presidential election is going to be particularly nasty for this country. How did we become a nation of people and politicians who either talk past each other or attack each other's motives and character?
Yeah, so, you know, I guess one thing to mention at the beginning is we've always been polarized in different ways. And so in some sense, what we're seeing today is not that new. Roger Williams was debating some of the Puritans pretty fiercely, before the country was even founded, and then we had a civil war over our disagreements. So we've had a lot of bad blood, and we've had a lot of nasty talk, but we're seeing it front and center for sure today, and as you mentioned, the election is certainly heightening all of it. I tend to think that the social media aspect of everything is putting it more in our faces on a daily and an even hourly basis than we've ever seen before.
You know, it is so nasty. I can't even look at some of the tweets and the posts that are coming out on various issues because you start, you know, reading, and I think many of us, we read an article, read an op-ed, and then we're kind of tempted to go down and see what people have to say about it. And the vitriol, just the venom that's spewed out by people in America. And it seems to me, just psychologically, there's this, okay, you know, it's I'm here in my bedroom with my pajamas on, but I'm going to let them know how I really feel, you know, so you press send and, for Christians to be involved in that sort of stuff. And I have some Christian friends who, you know, they're very politically involved and sometimes they spout off on stuff. And I don't think they're representing their savior, the way that he would want them to represent him. God is obviously calling us to a much different standard than he is the world.
I think there are two challenges here, and one is what you just mentioned. It's so easy, especially when we are offended ourselves by something and maybe something that someone wrote directly at us, and I find this all the time on social media. I have to take a deep breath or wait an hour or even a day to respond to something for precisely the reason you mentioned. It's important to have our language and our discourse at a different level, even if others are not there with us. But the other challenge that also confronts a lot of Christians is we end up surrounding ourselves only with our own echo chambers. So we hear and have only our own ideas reinforced. And that also contributes to a real problem in the dialogue. We start to believe that everything we think and read is the truth and everything that other people are saying is just wrong. And the world is sometimes more complicated than that. And we really can help ourselves by getting out of our own bubbles sometimes.
I have to commend my wife, you know, because she is one who she's politically conservative, but she'll, you know, read Huffington Post or listen to NPR. She will say, I want to find out what the other side has to think on this issue. And I think all of us can stand to, be open to the ideas of the other side, even though we may strongly disagree with them, simply to listen to, as you said, the echo chamber. And, you know, we've heard recently with the whole Facebook algorithm thing. They're, you know, sending back to you stuff that they know you want to read. That doesn't help the polarization issue, does it?
No, that's exactly right. Yeah, the social media channels and avenues are not helping things at all. One practical thing I try to do is when I read something I think I'm going to disagree with, I ask myself, is there one thing in this piece that I'm going to learn from, or is there one thing that's going to surprise me? And maybe the opportunities to be surprised or to find unanticipated aspects of common ground, even in the midst of something that we're disagreeing with overall quite a bit, is a way to not only to understand different arguments, but to understand the humanity of the people behind those arguments.
Hmm. John, I know you're an expert on our founders and the First Amendment. What did our founders mean when they talked about a pluralistic society? Because it's the society that we live in today is a very different one from the one that existed in the 1700s.
Right. So one of the arguments that I've made in a couple of different books and papers is to emphasize how much the founders really did appreciate and understand that we were going to have deep differences in our society. That when Madison talked about factions, this was not a nice idea. This was a recognition that we were going to be divided, but that we somehow had to live together in the midst of that. So one of the most important things the founders did was to put protections into the First Amendment that recognize the need for dissent and difference, that recognize that the majority would run over the minority without meaningful constitutional protections in place. And our entire history has been a history of honoring those protections. One of the challenges now is that our divides today are not just divides over substantive areas, but they're even divides over how far those protections should extend. So we're seeing somewhat of a fissure and a fracture over the very meaning of the First Amendment itself, and that is adding to some of the complications we see.
Let me ask you about religious pluralism for a moment. For the founders, didn't religious pluralism mainly mean respecting theological differences between different denominations rather than, let's say, between Christianity and Islam or Christianity and atheism?
Well, that's right. Just as a sociological matter, almost all of the founders were thinking within a context where religious difference and religious pluralism was largely Protestant denominational differences. They recognized Catholics and a few other non-Protestant faiths, but it was mostly the Protestants. Now, that said, the differences between Protestant denominations back then were a lot more fierce than they are today. People were, you know, killing and beating each other over Protestant denominational differences. So the vision that they might live together was not a small vision at all, and it required a kind of pluralism and a kind of tolerance that maybe has some lessons for us today. I do think, though, that the demographic changes mean that the challenge of religious pluralism is much greater for us today, and we have now not just many different versions of Christianity, but all kinds of different faiths and people of no faith. And the new category, the growing category of atheists, puts even more pressure on what it means to be religiously pluralistic.
Our guest, Dr. John Anazu, he's the author of a new book called Confident Pluralism, Surviving and Thriving Through Deep Difference. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on Faith Radio.
.7 FM and AM 900, the Twin Cities Faith Radio.
Welcome back. 18 past the hour. This is Faith Radio. Bill Meyer with Dr. John Anazu. He is an associate professor of law and political science at Washington University in St. Louis. He has a new book out, Confident Pluralism, Surviving and Thriving Through Deep Difference. John, do you believe that the founders' ideas about tolerance can really be applied in today's society where many people completely deny natural law and put their own desires above the common good?
So there are a couple of real challenges there, and you've named both of them. One is that there is less of a consensus about what the law is or where it comes from, and the other is because of our increased diversity, it's even harder now to name today what the common good is. Do we have a common good as a country? And those are not insignificant challenges. At the same time, and part of the reason that I wrote the book I did is to suggest that we do have enough of a modest unity that remains in our country. We have a historical tradition, we have a constitution that most people still agree with, and we have a history where we've worked this out over time. It's going to be harder for sure, and I think we're going to have to spend less time trying to name a collective common good and more time trying to find out where we have areas of common ground. But I do think this is also an opportunity for Christians to lead by demonstration and less by words and claims. We're going to have to spend more time showing what we believe than saying what we believe.
You know, that is so well said. And we, as believers, as followers of Jesus Christ, you know, we are called to be salt and light. We don't always do that very effectively. I think the research we see from the Barna Group and Lifeway would tell us that oftentimes the way, you know, Christians are perceived, partly it's media portrayal, but partly it's the fact that people, U.S. citizens, are interacting with evangelical Christians on a daily basis. And oftentimes we are not the best representatives of our Savior. Let me ask you this, John. Can you explain the difference? Because I think this is key to your book. Explain the difference between pluralism and relativism.
Sure. It's an important question, an important question for Christians to take seriously. And so the first point is, there are arguments for pluralism that are arguments for relativism. They're out there, and it's important to sift carefully and discern well. And there's no claim compatible with Christianity that takes us to relativism. And so it's important to recognize what those arguments are. The argument that I'm making and that many other people have made is really starts with a descriptive argument that we are pluralistic in our beliefs and in society. There's just a lot of difference out there. And so the question, once we recognize and accept that difference, is what do we do with it? And so I'm suggesting that there's a way in which we can live generously and charitably with those around us in a way that does not compromise our own beliefs. So the end game here is not sort of a happy acceptance of all beliefs out there. As Christians, and really anyone, when you press them on it, will say that there are absolutely good and bad beliefs. There's good and evil. And so it's important to be able to be in the public square and be in society and make those claims. But there's a way to do so, maybe not so much in what we say, but how we say it, our tone, our mode of interaction, our willingness to listen to others, even when we disagree. That's what it takes to live in a pluralistic society.
My sense is, and you can correct me if you disagree with this, but my sense is many Christians tend to be defensive about their beliefs because they don't really have answers for some of the challenging questions they may be asked by an agnostic, an atheist, a gay activist, you name it. Do you think we would see less defensiveness if more of us turned off the TV, unplugged from Facebook, and actually engaged in the life of the mind and were, you know, well-versed in things like Christian worldview and apologetics, so when these tough conversations come up, we are confident rather than defensive?
Yeah, I think these questions of discipleship and formation are really important, and part of what we're seeing, especially with things like youth ministry and interaction with kids and on the college level, is a recognition that we haven't done a great job in some areas of discipleship and formation. So there's a real opportunity here, and I think you just named it. The first word of the title of my book is confident, and I think as Christians, we of all people have reason for confidence, and if we take seriously what we're devoting our lives to, then we should have every reason to engage with others and take risks, because we know the end of the story.
And the end of the story, God wins, which we are very thankful for. John, we've just got about 3 minutes left. In your book, you differentiate between the personal and the legal aspects of confident pluralism. And I want to commend folks to read the book itself. But can you just briefly flesh those out for us?
Sure. The main argument here is that we have to have both legal protections and kind of a civic aspiration framework in place for something like confident pluralism to work. And on the front end, when I get into the legal challenges, one of the real important points there is I just don't think people realize or take seriously enough the current state of the law and how bad it is with respect to something like supporting pluralism. So when we look at the actual First Amendment, the right of association, the way that we engage in public spaces through something called the public forum, these current legal doctrines are not in good shape. And people need to know this, and they need to understand sort of why that is and how it came to be. And then when it comes to the civic aspirations, and here I focus on the importance of tolerance, of humility, and of patience, and how we, both as believers and those who aren't believers, can come together around these aspirations just to treat each other better, that there are a lot of spaces that the law is not going to govern. Right? We see this every day in social media, in the political campaigns, where people are saying nasty things and treating each other extremely poorly. And no one is telling us we have to act that way. We can choose to act and behave and speak differently. And so there's a challenge in the second half of the book of how might we do that? How might we take seriously our own beliefs, but engage seriously with other people as human beings?
Well, this is a marvelous book, and I believe every Christian should read it. The title again is Confident Pluralism, Surviving and Thriving Through Deep Difference. The author is Dr. John Anazu. John, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're on vacation with your family. I appreciate you taking a half hour out of your schedule to join us this morning.
Bill, thanks so much for having me.
25 minutes past the hour. This is The Faith Radio.